In The Last Jedi, what
happens?
Stop it!
We're not gonna do Star Wars. Quit it. Captain Spot, Stardate 1924-25.1. Welcome aboard the Starship Enterprise, and thank you for joining us as we take a brief shore leave from the world of CinemaSins to explore the universe of Star Trek. I'm your Captain Ian Whittington, and with me this week, they say the Temporal Prime Directive exists purely because of something he did in the 90s. It's Daniel Cardoso.
Hello.
Will you tell us what the thing you did is
what the
in
thing
the
I
90s?
Did?
Yeah.
In the 90s?
Mm-hmm.
The thing I did in the 90s was, you see, the problem with The Last Jedi is that the problem with most of the criticism of The Last Jedi is they get the whole thing really, really wrong. Can we just be clear?
Yeah, Daniel has expertly referenced a Bony Pod that we just recorded. So if you want to understand that, head over to the Sin Club and listen to our most recent Bony Pod. Well, for anybody that doesn't know, Daniel has been on the show before. We did Timeless, a Voyager episode. And as I put the what's your favorite Star Trek question out to everybody, I also put it out to the CinemaSins team. And my lovely CinemaSins colleague, Daniel, put across a few episodes, one that I think we'd already covered. We're obviously going to do the season 7 episode of TNG, The Pegasus, which I love so much. But before we get into it, can you remember any of the other contenders that were swimming around your mind when we talked about your favorites?
It was Relics?
Mm. Yeah, that's the one that we literally did 2 weeks ago.
Yes.
Which is perfect.
That was the first one that popped into my head. Because I remember the Dyson Sphere that like stuck in my mind.
Mm-hmm.
The technology in Star Trek really is like what I've connected with as like a kid when I first watched it. So like every time I think about episodes, like there's just like always like a cool thing that like blew my mind at the time that sort of like connects me to a lot of the episodes. And that one was the Dyson Sphere. Just like that concept was completely new to me. And like, it was just cool.
I love that so much. And it was one of the things we talked about when we did that episode was Relics kind of wastes this awesome concept. And like the Dyson Sphere is the thing that pulled me in as well. And I was less interested in Scotty and way more interested in what the Dyson Sphere was doing. And just the scale of creating that solar system level structure is insane.
I was thinking about that. Ooh. What you just said too about like it's hard to say they wasted the concept, but like you could have imagined like so much more being done. And it's kind of funny to like see like all these like really good concepts in the series,
mm-hmm.
and then versus what they did for some of the movies, which
right, yes,
like they could have just made it. I mean, you couldn't do it the same way, but they could have just expanded upon like that. And even the Pegasus, like they sort of, because of the runtime limits, end up like rushing through like a lot of the stuff like with the, like the science fiction, like the concepts and stuff. They just like kind of like, all right, we got to get through that and put it all together and make it work.
That's
but
a great
like,
point.
That could have been like half an hour of movie alone on just that.
They get to it, like, 2 minutes. Absolutely extend that into a movie, even the Dyson Sphere stuff you could. But yeah, the Pegasus in particular, like that revelation on the big screen. No, we're starting to talk about the Pegasus and we're not even ready yet, Daniel. You're as bad as Danae. Any other contenders before we get into it?
As like favorites? That's so rough because the series are so different.
Yeah, they're so, so different. Like picking out what TOS does for me versus TNG and Voyager is wildly different.
And then to compare them, say which one's better.
Do it. Tell me right now, objectively, which one is better. Rank your children.
That's a great way to put it.
It's how everyone has hated me for this question. And it's very telling that I haven't given mine.
And there's like all like the ones that everyone talks about. It was like Best of Both Worlds.
Mm-hmm.
Yesterday's Enterprise.
Yes.
I mean, yeah. So it's like, all right. I feel like even I didn't think that anyone would have picked Relics already, so it's like now I'm just like digging a bit deeper into
but the reverse logic is true, because I think a lot of people deliberately steered away from the classics like Best of Both Worlds, The Inner Light.
So no one picked them.
So no one's picked them. None of those are on the list. Like, spoiler alert, if you want one of those episodes, email them in, because nobody has picked Best. I don't think anyone has picked Best of Both Worlds yet. No one's picked The Inner Light. And I know they get held up as some of like the best. But yeah, you were also the first to pick Pegasus, the Pegasus. So yeah, I think we dive into it. This is one of my favorite episodes as well. The seventh season of TNG gets maligned a little bit for being a bit too wacky, but this is...
It is wacky. Yeah,
this can be wacky, but it really is one of the best episodes of TNG. Well, let's get into it. Let's head over to the holodeck to watch the episode, and we'll see you all in 10 forward for a full and detailed debriefing. Two to beam out. Welcome to 10 Forward, the part of the show where we grab something from the replicator and share our immediate thoughts and feelings on the episode we just watched. Most important question first, what would you like from the replicator, Daniel?
I would like some Saurian brandy.
Yes. I assume there is always Saurian brandy in 10 Forward. I want whatever ale Riker was drinking with Pressman, because it seemed like it was really bitter. It seemed like it was like taking him aback. Like, I think he was mixing an alcoholic beverage in with his ale. My backup actually was the sushi that Picard was eating in his quarters, because that looked delicious.
Why went with the brandy? Because like they were having like something in like little glasses in the ready room. Oh yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
when Picard and Pressman are talking.
They didn't say what it was.
I bet it is.
That's the only thing I could think of, because it looked like a brandy glass.
Yeah.
Like, it didn't look like a whiskey, like, it wasn't like a rocks glass, or like, it wasn't tea.
No. I mean, you don't know. Maybe that's how Picard serves tea in season 7. It's just, it's in tiny little cocktail, little cocktail decanter things.
He's just messing with people now. He's like, yeah. Oh,
telling them it's brandy, but it's actually just tea without any milk in it at all. Amazing. Well, as is customary, not for me, but for whoever isn't me on the show, give us a quick synopsis of the episode that we just watched.
Okay.
I did not prep Daniel for this either. It is a surprise synopsis.
So, in The Last Jedi, what happens...
Stop it! Now you're gonna scream with everyone, Daniel. Quit it!
My issue with The Last Jedi...
No. We're not going to do Star Wars. Quit it.
So in this episode, we have the Enterprise is set upon a very secret, a sort of hush-hush mission. They don't really know what they're getting into, to track down an old ship that Riker was a crew person aboard, that some stuff happened, but his old captain shows up and is tasked him upon... doing some nefarious things in retrieving some technology from this ship, and they're searching for it, and then the Romulans show up and they're being all Romulan like.
You're not wrong. These are the most Romulans to ever Romulan in an episode. Oh, did I collapse the tunnel? Yeah. Oh, I'm so sorry.
Did I take you hostage accidentally? how does such a thing happen?
Oh my!
Let me help you out of that. So it was a bit of a race to be the first ship to find the Pegasus, and it's in the middle of an asteroid. The ship has somehow been materialized, I guess you would say, in the middle of this asteroid. So like parts of the ship are completely submerged in rock, conveniently the part that they need has not been, because like that would have ended the episode right there, and
sure would.
Everyone would have just went home and there would have been no drama whatsoever,
no climax. Yeah,
they find out that this is a cloaking device that not only cloaks, that the Pegasus is materialized in the rock because it was using an experimental cloaking device that doesn't just cloak, but it also phases the ship so that it can pass through material.
Perfectly suited to this situation.
It seems really like two things that could have been separate. Like, they could have had two different pieces of technology, but they've just decided that a cloak can do this. Like, it didn't need to all, like, the like,
oh, that's one of my biggest sins. Like, yeah.
Then there's like phasing. Like, they didn't need to put that feature on the cloak, but they did, which is interesting because the phasing thing doesn't violate the Treaty of Alderaan.
But biggest sin of the episode. Yeah, this only had to be a phase. That's it. Full stop. Just we found a way to phase through things, because that means that torpedoes can't hit you. It means phasers can't hit you. Like, you didn't need to add cloak onto this as well. And I'm sure, I mean, please, science nerds, email us specifically why this fictional technology has to be a cloak. But I don't think it had to violate a treaty.
And because now they're inside the asteroid, what are you going to do other than you're going to call in Data and Geordi to do some engineering wizardry and integrate this piece of technology they've never seen before into the ship within like a couple hours. And they do it. Obviously, they make it work, and they just drive that bad boy right back out, right through the door.
Yep, that is safe.
And they pop up behind the Romulans, and they're just like, surprise. But nothing happens.
We're leaving.
They're not even surprised. They're just like, oh, okay. And Picard and Riker have a little heart to heart about the ethics of what Will did in the past, and that he's gonna have to sit in front of some people and talk about it.
We're kind of lucky that we didn't get that episode instead of this, because that would have been very Star Trek to give us the court case of Riker.
Not showing what happened.
Yeah, exactly. So I love the heck out of this episode. Like, this fits the definition of fan favorite for me so well, because it's just one of my go-to fun episodes. It's one, like, if I had a spare hour with him, we would just throw on Pegasus, because we're guaranteed to have a good time with it, because you've got some fun tech, you've got some good performances, you've got some drama on the bridge. We talked about in the intro some other options, but why is Pegasus one of your favorites? Why is it the one that you wanted to bring to the table today?
Despite me being snarky about all like the convenience of the technology, like, I think that is one of the cooler things that they've done for me was like the whole like phasing through matter. I mean, like, sort of now it's been done, but like when this episode first came out, I don't know what year it was, when I first saw it, like, that was just like one of the coolest things that I
93 is when it came out, I think. Wait, no, 94. I think it came out in 94. But yeah, completely agree. It's so cool. I want the Enterprise to keep that power so much.
And there's so much, there's really like so much to the story. Like, we talked a little bit about how it's like this could have been a feature length movie just based upon this premise. Like, you're saying, like, that Star Trek would have showed us the court case, like that could have been something that they explored further. The whole relationship being challenged between Riker and Picard is like is massive character moments for them that gets kind of like resolved very quickly, but it feels almost too quickly just because they have to fit it into the episodic length.
Yeah, you could have had an entire scene where he's talking to Deanna, for example, somebody who in theory you would hope knows that something is up and may have even like had this confided to her at some point. And have that. And I know have you seen the finale for Enterprise that revisits this episode?
Yeah.
So they have a bit of that in that finale. They kind of have a discussion where Riker keeps it vague. But yeah, you would have had that scene. And I think you're right. It's one of those episodes that could easily have been a two-parter. And I think about Gambit, which is a two-parter in this season, I think. Or season 6, I can't remember. But Gambit, I feel like, is one episode, and this could have easily been a feature length two episode thing where, I mean, you could even have the reveal of the Pegasus phased into the meteor, and that's your like finale. The Enterprise is closed inside, the Pegasus is materialized, they find out. I think you'd make the phase cloak reveal a little bit earlier maybe, but it's, yeah, it could easily be a two-parter.
Yeah, and there's the whole the whole intelligence bit, like at the beginning, where they're like, are an agent inside that we have embedded with the Romulans.
Yes,
told us about they found this thing, and like you could have that whole thing explored with this like a completely new unknown character doing this like very cool thing at the beginning. of like smuggling information out of Romulus. Like,
yes. How do they get the information? Like, this is vital enough that I'm gonna, in some form, break cover to get this information to you, because this is time sensitive. Like, there's no way that information got to them as part of like a regular briefing, because it would have been like, wait, what? You didn't tell us this immediately? Like, I imagine like that agent is probably dead or like on their way, like they've broken cover now to get that information because it's so crucial. So yeah, there are so many angles you can come at this from.
There's very high up people in Starfleet that are incriminated in this.
Yeah. The head of Starfleet security herself, Captain Picard. Yeah, it's so, so cool. In fact, somebody in the live chat has just said, perfect time for Section 31 to appear. But yeah, I'm completely with you on that. This episode is such a fun one. I love the like you said, the new technology in it. Whenever Star Trek does something fun with technology, I'm all in. And just seeing the Enterprise cloak is novel. Like, we're not allowed to do that. That's naughty.
Speaking of cloaking, I had to kind of look this up because, and I don't know if I got the right answer on this, I was wondering how the Defiant did not violate the Treaty of Algeron.
Yeah, I think it's an agreement.
It is an agreement with the Romulans that allow them to build that ship.
Very convenient agreement where, yeah, they said, I don't even think they've designed it themselves. I think they've literally borrowed a cloaking device from the Romulans just for this. Yeah. So they're still not allowed to keep the technology. But yeah, it was, I still think that's like incredibly convenient. I don't think there's a chance in hell the Romulans are agreeing to pass that, unless they had like a Romulan stationed on the Defiant the entire time and just like has a cloak over the cloaking, a literal cloak over the actual cloaking device. It's like, no, you can't see. You can't see what this does or how it works. No. It'd be amazing.
It breaks or like that person gets killed and then like they they can't even find the piece of technology on the ship.
Yes, we don't know where they put it. One of the things I love about this episode is the cold open. This has, I say this I feel like every week, but this really does have one of my favorite cold opens ever, and it's the Captain Picard Day stuff. And you can tell this is a later episode because of the humor that's in it. Like, it's almost like they had permission to be a bit funnier. And I always remember it being so jarring. Riker doing an impression of Captain Picard in front of Captain Picard is just, it's so fun. But the look that Picard gives him is more damning than anything else in the episode, just because he walks off with the doll. So yeah, I just think it's such a fun introduction to what's a really heavy episode.
Just the later seasons, and like hearing how Patrick Stewart like softened on set, and it's like, yeah, you can see a bit more like swagger. He's less rigid, and like even like the self-deprecating humor about like Picard, he seems much more in on, much more okay with.
Mm-hmm.
Like before, you could see the seriousness on his face like wasn't acting. It was just him being actually very serious. Whenever like someone would make a joke on set, he's just like,
this is professional. It's like, sir, you are on a spaceship pretending to be a spaceman.
The Admiral like asks him like what's going on. He's like, oh, it's Picard Day. He's like, I'm somewhat of a role model or something like that. And then like, she's like, okay. And then like he just has this like, womp, womp, womp. Like,
I'm sure you are. Because as much as like he might give away a little bit to his crew, to like an admiral or somebody above, he wants to keep that shit locked down. You absolutely know that. This episode continues the long-running tradition of evil admirals. We can't have anyone visiting the Enterprise unless they have something shady going on, of course. But how does Pressman hit you? I love him. I think what's his name? I literally said it earlier. Terry O'Quinn, who even like from my early days of watching this episode, I would have known from Lost more than anything. He's such a cool bit of casting for, obviously this predates Lost by like 10 years, but he's such a cool bit of casting for this Admiral. I don't think this episode is as memorable if he doesn't give such a good performance.
Oh yeah. I can see like the casting director was just like, I need a evil Picard, right down to his hairline.
Yes! Like, he's just missing an English accent, or he should have been like German or something to counterbalance the French of Picard.
Him and Patrick Stewart, they're on the same page about this. There's like the good father, bad father.
Yes.
For like Will. and like that's like the whole thing is like one is like you listen to me no matter what sort of thing, and the other in Picard is wants his decision making, wants him to think independently and to like challenge him, and it's like going from they're both those two extremes, and like it plays out in every conversation that they two of them have together, Picard and the Admiral.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite bits of the episode. It's another facet where you get to Pressman boldly talks about his way of commanding. Like he doesn't like. I almost get the impression he doesn't care about Picard's reputation, doesn't care about his stature as like captain of the flagship. He's more like, you don't command how I do. Like there is one way to be a captain, and it's this: you have to do as I say. I'm captain for a reason. Don't disagree with me. And Picard obviously is a bit more humble and is more wanting to trust his officers. And he's always giving Riker more commands than probably any other commander that we see. Like Kirk is very much always in control. Picard delegates a lot. He's a great, great delegator. There's not a wasted scene in this episode. Like the one between Picard and Pressman is about talking about the different command styles and how that has led Pressman to be a bit of a dick, and how Picard is where he's at.
It's very interesting though that Pressman like was made an admiral after like that the whole fiasco. Like I guess he's like that. Like that's part of the story that I would also like to understand is he makes so many bad decisions just in this episode, and like the whole backstory is him making these poor decisions that seem to be out of line with the general philosophy of the Federation. So it's of Starfleet, and so it's very interesting that he becomes an admiral in like the sort of world, and like that's sort of like where like the whole like background of like the which like you we get there eventually, and even like into like Picard is like the Federation isn't as good as like we think they are. Like not everyone is as altruistic, which is very interesting. It's like how does he get to be an admiral but like before Picard, who is like our paragon?
Yeah, my cynical brain is that there's a lot of self-serving people in Starfleet that want to keep him close. So there were people that were obviously in on this and wanted the phase cloak and didn't give a crap about the Treaty of Algernon, because okay, who cares if we violate the treaty when we have a bit of tech that will make us definitely win the war that follows us breaking the treaty? Like this treaty works for us because we're scared of the Romulans. We're not scared of them anymore, so screw it. So I think there's a contingent that's like, let's promote him up through the ranks to keep him close, because if we keep him far away, like we get the impression he's pretty rebellious, so maybe he's more dangerous out there than he is if we promoted him. And that's very much like it goes against the like utopia thing of Star Trek in the future, that yeah, there's a utopia, but humans are still flawed and they're still going to make really shitty decisions if we leave them to their own devices. But it's like, I like exploring that bit of Star Trek. Like there's an evil admiral cliche, but they're the most interesting episodes. They're the ones that we talk about. Like this one, Doomsday, the Doomsday Machine in TOS with the chaotic Commodore, I think, that comes on and he's just loopy. I love those episodes. They're really, really fun. So yeah, Pressman adds a lot to this one for me. I love Jonathan Frakes' performance in this one. I think this might be like the best. Like I think Frakes overall is a better director than he is an actor. He's directed some like really great episodes of Star Trek, but he's like, I really love his performance in this one, right from like the first time Pressman beams onto the ship, which they obviously keep a secret. That's like
That's wild that Pressman himself doesn't even like send like a pre like arrival like communique that just so you know stuff's going down and I need you to be on board with it. He just is like, oh hey, haven't seen you in a while.
By the way, don't look shocked when I arrive because it's going to give away that I'm up to something. But yeah, I love like Riker's reaction when Pressman arrives is so good. Like he is like stunned. Like you, I don't know how, but like you can see all of like the color fade from his face and he just looks stunned. And when he's getting dressed down by Picard as well, and Picard has the great line of, I'm going to have to trust you to make sure that the ship isn't in danger. And if that trust is misplaced, I will have to reassess the command structure on the ship. And it's like delivered so matter-of-factly, but Riker, like, he's a child in that scene. Like, you see him, like, internally fall apart.
So I was gonna say, like, the whole episode, that's what it is. It's like he's taken right back to, like, the point of the incident, like, emotionally.
Yeah.
Like you're saying, like, his facial expressions and everything are very much juxtaposed to the cocky guy at the beginning who's pretending to be Captain Picard with the
It's so great, and that's got to be deliberate. Like, he's at the height of his powers, he's feeling confident, and you just see, and he's like, everyone mentions like how tall Riker is and how like dominating he is. He has to have his leg at a right angle, dominating every person that he walks near. But in this episode, like, you just see him shrink as his two dads are just like on opposite sides of the argument, and like, which one do I be loyal to, my new dad or my older dad that I went through some tough times with? It's so good. I think Frakes does an awesome job in this episode.
And I feel like it's such a change, not a change, what's it? It seems like such a pivotal moment for him that it makes me feel even more like we got robbed of his, like, of him as a captain.
Yeah.
Because like this is sort of like his, it's like a test. It's like a threshold that he passes through in this episode where it's like afterwards, it's like he should sort of be level up, I guess.
Yeah.
In a sense.
Yeah, this would be a big moment for him. Like, Picard sums it up at the end, like, you chose to come forward when the time was right. Like, there's a little bit of all of the good things you've done since then make up for that one person you murdered, but you still committed a crime. But yeah, this is where he has to really, like, buckle in and choose his command style as well. Like, does he double down and follow the pressman route? Which, if he does, there's probably a home for him in Starfleet. He probably still gets promoted and still gets a ship, and maybe him and Picard just never talk again. But he chose what type of captain he wants to be. Yeah, that's a really, really good point. I love that.
Well, did watching this show, it did make me, like I was saying, like, we never got, like, a Captain Riker. And that made me really sort of, like, reassess, actually, Picard, like, the show.
Oh, and my gosh, like, yes.
I don't know. Like, I, as much as I love Captain Picard, but I think that Riker would have been an interesting way to go, where you could use a lot of the same story elements from Picard, but just have a center more around Riker, and like have like their sort of a roles reversed, where he's a little bit like, he's still like can command a ship, and like Picard's like, he's like out of it, and like he sort of has to like sort of like Picard's there like trying to, they might have explored this a little bit, but like trying to get stuff done, and like their relationship is turned over, so like the dynamic is different, and like how that, where they, when they, where like you have these same situations where they're sort of butt heads, and like you could have that same challenge. And I just think that for this crew, it would have been really interesting to explore that.
I completely agree. I think there's a lot of poor planning, there's a lot of other stuff that contributed to Picard not being quite what I personally wanted it to be. And having Captain Riker, like, we get Captain Riker at the very, very end of season one, and we do see him in a command position in season three, but it's very limited, and it feels like such an obvious in. It feels like such a great way in for Picard to, like, get mobile. And I know I was shocked in season one when he was like, I'm gonna need some friends so that I can go and investigate the Data's newfound android daughters.
Yeah.
But he was like, I don't want to get any of my TNG friends in trouble. So you end up with a completely new cast. And to be fair, yes, it very much was Picard, the TV show, not TNG season 20. But we all kind of expected Star Trek Picard was going to be TNG, and it didn't become that until season three. So, yeah, no, I completely agree. There's a lot of wasted opportunity there. And Captain Riker, on the Titan would have been, there's a series of books about it, but there's a great story there just waiting to be told. And yeah, I know live chat is reminding me, we get a little bit of it in Lower Decks, and that's my favorite episode of Lower Decks as well, is when Captain Riker turns up on the Titan. So yeah, many, many wasted opportunities, completely agree. Any other highlights from the episode? I definitely want to talk about the Romulan chess match of it at some point.
Highlight is Dr. Crusher just getting a big old hand of Riker meat.
I don't know why, but that scene stands out to me so much. When it's Riker, he goes to sickbay for his metaphorical, I should have ducked when I should have weaved, and I'm an idiot and I should have done better. And Beverly just gets in there and just slides fingers through his pec. Like, nowhere near the wound. Like, I don't know why she needs purchase for the dermal regenerator. But yeah, she's got her fingers all in that man hair. And yeah, absolutely stands out to me as well. Get a good handful of it, Doctor.
The other big point is like the chess match that you were referring to. I think that's like, another thing that feels like it's cut short or like a lot more. It's because it's very much like, I mean, the whole show is submarine warfare, but like that really taps into it of like, we're searching for something. We're both searching for something and not telling each other.
Mm-hmm. It's a great way to frame the episode, because you could say, like, oh great, it's the Romulans again. By the time we get to season 7, like, have we run out of ideas? Have we run out of steam? But this is like, the cloaking stuff is so applicable to the Romulans, and they have been established as very secretive, and everything with them is a game of chess. And the way, like, the dialogue between Picard and what's his name, Sirole, is so good. Like, it's so crackling. Like, there's so much mutual respect and also just heaps of sarcasm in it. Like, I love it when they turn up and it's like, what are you doing? No, it's it would have been a shame if your ship had been damaged because you just suddenly appeared. It's like, oh my, Captain, we were never in any danger. And then just followed up with the what are you doing here? Oh, we're researching gas clouds. Oh, would you look at that? So are we. And that's so fun to see. I love that. That's my happy place in TNG.
Absolutely. It's like, that was it's very Cold War-esque.
The other thing that stands out to me that I love in this episode is this thing that it addresses a thing that had always bugged me. And that is, why doesn't Starfleet have cloaking technology? And we know it's because of this treaty, but it always felt huge because the Klingons have it, the Romulans have it. It is a huge, huge tactical advantage. Personally, I don't know how I don't know how Starfleet ever won any conflict against the Klingons and Romulans for there to be a treaty when they have a cloaking device that, I know there's ways of scanning them, but they can just appear, attack, and then disappear. Like, I don't know how we were ever on a level playing field. So it always bugged me that this treaty forced Starfleet from not developing cloaking tech. So I just think it's really fun to like make an episode. Okay, well, what if there was a branch of Starfleet that said fuck that and was like, yeah, but we really, really need this. Of all of like the evil admirals that turn up, this one felt like a really believable one for me. I was like, yeah, I can totally buy that. There's someone that's like, fuck the treaty. We need our own cloaking tech.
What do you think happens, like your speculation, to this technology after the episode?
Man.
As far as my memory goes, I don't think this has ever been revisited.
No. There's an episode called The Next Phase, and Geordi and Ro end up getting phased. Like, they're trying to help out a Romulan ship, and they interact with something, and it ends up phasing them. And everybody thinks they're dead, but they're actually just invisible. And that's the only other reference. And I'm pretty sure that happens before this episode anyway. So yeah, we never revisit this phase cloak technology, even in like Picard, which is like 30 years after this now. We haven't revisited it. So yeah, if we were going to do like a TV show now, I'd want that to play into it somehow. Even Discovery, I don't think, mentions the phase cloaking technology. They've kind of completely moved on from it, which feels strange.
Like after they go to the future?
Yeah. Like when they go to the year 3090 or something like that. They have everything but phasing. I think they have a regular cloak, but I don't think they have phasing cloaks.
It's such an overpowered piece of technology.
Oh, completely. Yeah.
It's like how do we build tension after like they have this? And they already have the spore drive, like in that one, which seems like an incredibly, I mean, it doesn't seem like it, that's an incredibly overpowered thing for that series. Mm-hmm. That I think they managed to make it work, but like at a certain point they just become invincible.
Yeah,
and it's like you stop believing that anyone can challenge. Like
you can be anywhere, instantaneously invisible and impervious to anything because you can just pass through all things. Yeah, it is kind of wild. I mean, the only way Discovery dealt with it was by removing them from time. This is so problematic. We need to shunt you into the future. Yeah, it's a really good point. But it's one of the cognitive dissonances that I have where the technology is so cool and I'm so happy to see it on screen that I almost turn my sim brain off and I just let it happen. Because at the same time, I wouldn't want to miss the implications of this technology and like seeing, like they do a lot of cool stuff with it. Like we get to see a what if a ship suddenly materializes inside of something. We see that consequence and we get to see the Enterprise using it and passing through stuff. So it almost gets a pass for me because I'm like, I'm just glad it exists. I'm glad this will be one of my what if episodes where I'm like, man, wouldn't it be cool if they had this technology? And they actually did it. They actually made it. On the nerdier side of things, and this is really, really nerdy. I love what they get to do with the model of the Enterprise in this episode, because it's when they go inside the asteroid and it's just the lights. It's just the fact that it's lit up. Like, even though it's in space, it's not often that we really get to see the Enterprise lit up like this. And I just really get a feel that it's a really well-designed model with beautiful lighting on it. And we know it's not CG. We know those lights are actually there. And it's just beautiful shots like that. I don't know that we'll ever see them again in the world of like CG and stuff. That's probably a good question. Like when you watch TNG now, like do you have that same longing for it as well, or do you prefer the more CGI effects that we see in like modern Star Trek?
One of the reasons that I loved models and when they used to use the models is because they gave the models more, like it maybe it's like a fraction of a second or like an extra second more screen, more still screen time where you could soak in a little bit more detail on it.
Yes.
The biggest thing with like CGI and well, like with the way it's used, it's like even though like what they can create seems like it should be like a lot better, they don't ever let you see it because it's always moving. Everything's moving
constantly.
Everything's moving so fast. The camera's moving. So it's like in like there's the like lighting, like whether it be explosions or something, like the lighting's changing. So it's like you never really get to soak in the ship.
Completely.
In the same way. So it's like, even though like it should be better, like I don't think the experience ends up being better.
Yeah, I've never had the same experience with computer generated. Even in, I mean, season 3 of Picard, where you get the glory shots of they bring the Enterprise D back. But it's still, even that is close, but it's still missing something. Like it sounds weird, but they never get the 3 part of 3D right. Like I know that this is a 3-dimensional model that physically exists in the real world, and I'm yet to see anything rendered that matches the models on screen, like size, scale, texture, lighting. I don't know that we'll be able to replicate it anytime soon. I'm like, just why can't we? Is it really that much more expensive to build the fucking model? Can we please just start doing that again? Like I don't know what the barriers are to building models, but they must exist.
I think it's more time. Well, I don't know. I mean, it takes a lot of time to render these things.
Yeah.
So.
Like we know there's a big shortage of like CGI artists and they're all being abused. Like there's got to be a lot of model makers that are out of work right now. Can we not like bring some of them back in? Start building some models? Bring the Wallace and Gromit people in to do it.
An entirely claymation Star Trek series. I'm here for it.
in a heartbeat, I would watch that. Yeah, first time I've realized that LeVar Burton directed this, and
I didn't realize that either.
It's showing me a pattern of some of my favorite episodes are directed by people that aren't directors yet. I think Jonathan Frakes did Cause and Effect, which is just my all-time favorite episode. LeVar Burton doing this. Last week we did Living Witness from Voyager, and that was Tim Russ, Tuvok, directed that. So
okay.
I just get this impression that, like, once they've been acting for a while, they really know what makes a good episode of Star Trek and just end up making some cool shit.
LeVar Burton also did the episode Timeless, which I think we did last time I was on here.
That is incredible. Yeah.
I didn't realize that he had directed both of them. That wasn't intentional.
That's amazing. You have an unconscious Geordi bias, as I think most of us do.
The question is, do we know who directed Relics? Because, like,
oh my gosh, let's have a
look. I swear to God, if LeVar Burton directed that one, then I clearly have an unconscious bias.
You really must. I'm going to Google that right now. Oh, Alexander Singer. So he's, okay. Yeah, he's done a lot of good episodes, but I was praying for that to be Geordi, LeVar Burton, I really was. Oh, I did have one more, like, there is a cursory nod here to the episode that establishes, it's basically the climate change episode of Star Trek where they put the warp speed limitations on it because, like, what they've discovered that warp drive is tearing apart the fabric of space. Force of Nature is the name of the episode.
Oh, yeah, I remember.
And the Admiral says regular subspace limitations have been overruled, like, for the duration of this ship. And it's kind of like, immediately they're like, we want to pretend that episode didn't happen. Like, it's fine. It matters until it doesn't matter. But that might be the last time that Force of Nature is referenced, because I always remember that episode ending with all ships are limited to warp 5 and there's this deadly silence across the bridge and they're just like, it sinks in, like, oh, we can't explore space anymore. We can't do it. But then the next week it's like, nah, whatever, it's fine. Like, they never committed in TNG to that long-lasting consequences. The last thing I wanted to say, and I mentioned this, like, when we just finished the episode, I think the weakest point is how quickly Picard nepotisms Riker at the end. And he's just like, you're not going to have to sit in the brig because I like you. Like, you've done some bad shit, but it's like, man, this brig sucks. Come on, out with me. Let's leave. Let's go have a beer or something, you criminal. So does that, like, with watching it with a more skeptical eye, does that ending bug you at all? Because I noticed it more this time, that it just feels jarring that, yes, Riker, he spells out that Riker is going to lose some respect, but in effect there are no consequences for him coming forward that we ever see.
It does bug me that, like, along the same lines of what I was saying, like, there isn't a sort of unreversible shift that sort of comes after for his, especially for his character. And, like, so it's probably not out of character at this point for Picard to do something like that. At least on the ship, I will say that I wish that sort of aspect of, like, Star Trek sort of was explored, like, the sort of that the rules don't apply to everyone, and that as good as we think we are, like, we're still, like, there's still, like, some, like, favoritism. Yeah. And like, these latent things that, like, they get very upset with Pressman about violating this treaty, and, like, as if there's no room to wiggle room with that, but there's still, like, wiggle room within people that break the law, as long as, like, they're members of my crew and I like
them. As long as they've done more good things. And to be honest, like, Picard using, like, no one's going to criticize him for this, but Picard using the cloak to save the Enterprise, even though he admits to it, is also breaking the treaty. Like, in theory, he probably should have given himself up to the Romulans. Like, and I don't think there's a single person in Starfleet that would actually back that. But on paper, like, if you're breaking the treaty, like, you're breaking the treaty. Like, you just plugged that thing into the Enterprise and then flew off and did it. It's not... You can't use cloaking devices unless you're really in trouble. Yeah. I don't think that, like, is in brackets in the treaty.
This was episode 12.
Yeah, episode 12.
It feels like it almost should have been later in the season.
Yeah, it feels like it probably would have had more weight if they'd done this right towards the end. And you could have even referenced it in the All Good Things. Like, hey, you remember that time you went to jail for 10 years, Riker? Because of the Pressman thing. Good to have you back, Commander. Amazing. Well, before we head in to the sins, how many pips out of 4? I don't know if we were doing pips when we did Timeless, but our ranking system, our ranking system is how many pips out of four, and it can be, wait, it's one, one and a half, no, it's one, two, two and a half, three, or four to follow the ranks of ensign, lieutenant, lieutenant commander, commander captain. And if you really, if it's perfect, it's four, and then obviously one is the lowest. We haven't been that chaotic and inverted the scale.
I'm going to say three. I think it was three pips.
Yeah, I'm...
Seems fair.
I really wish I could give it 3.5. I'm very close to giving it 4 because I love it so much, but there is like the inconsistency around the consequences that always jumps back out at me. But this is a really, really solid 3. Yeah. I really love this episode. Right, with that, let's head over to engineering and do some sins. 2 to beam out.
Warning. Warp core collapse in 10 seconds.
This is the part of the show where we re-engage our sin brains, remind ourselves that no TV show is without sin, even our beloved Star Trek. As guest, Daniel, you can go first. I think we're going to have some overlap in our sins here.
I think for me, the biggest sin was that... It's the last time I'm gonna picture it. That they gave Data all the they gave the android all the reaction shots like things going on, yes, on the bridge.
All of the emotional reaction shots.
Yes, which is great. It's great comedy. But
yes,
it makes like the least sense because he doesn't get to like emote anything. He just has to give you that his android side eye and be like, oh okay, There's like a visible tension between Pressman and Picard, and he's just like, oh snap.
It is.
without saying it. Because he's like, oh damn, what he just said that.
Yeah, because Picard's like make a note in the log of my objection, and he's like, it is so noted. And like it almost does a snap at the end. It's so good. His little like side eye at him is incredible.
But yeah, that's probably I think the biggest sin, even though I enjoy it, I'm happy that they did it. And then there's the Geordi's obligatory come take a look at this cliche.
Yep, you've definitely got that. When is that?
That was when they first find the they're scanning the thing. They first find the whatever they were scanning for the I can't remember. Well, they're scanning for the ship, but like he finds like traces of something.
Yeah, the specific
that
signature.
To the asteroid.
Yeah,
and like. Yeah, Riker's about to say something, and he's like, oh, I found something. And then, like, they all go over to the station. And then there's, like, the masterful techno-babble that he utters down in the engine room when they put the cloak up. Which could have came from really any episode.
It's nothing specific to the phase cloak in there. It's the fact that they, like, he says that they have to pump it through the nacelles or something. And I'm like, of all of the things, why the engines? Like, I'm really confused by why you're pumping the cloaking device. Like, mention the warp core, the deflector dish. Like, I can buy that because the deflector dish is, like, pushing matter out of the way or something. But why are you putting it into the NOS? Like, how is that going to help?
Oh, yeah. I'm trying to think of, like, what you would say. Like, how would you describe that with a car? Because, I mean, obviously, cars don't cloak. But what would that be like the... I'm gonna say is like if you have a convertible and it's like you put like the controls to the roof like through the engine.
Yes, that's exactly what it would be. Yeah, of all of the techno babble you could have come up with, that feels like a stretch.
Yeah, I like how you said it looked like they had just like a USB cord. Yeah. From the thing.
We definitely missed a scene where they're rifling through like some cupboards of cables and they just said,
the box
oh,
of cables.
Here's my phase cloak cable that I have just in case, because it's one of my biggest sins is the fact that this experimental thing works with the Enterprise, like completely different ship, 12 years removed from each other. Like, I don't know how those two systems talk to each other at all, and it works perfectly.
Oh, I mean, that's a huge Star Trek sin. It's like when it's like in Apollo 13 when they have to figure out put the CO2 scrubber to
yes.
from one of the ships from the LEM into the command module, or the other way around, from the command module into the LEM. And like you have like a whole room of guys that are like sweating, like smoking cigarettes and like stressing out. They're like, we need to fit this and that, and it's like with this, and it's a huge, huge moment. And like, they just seem to do that on Star Trek, like all the time, rather easy, they're magicians at a certain
point. They really are. And it's like, it's one of the, like, the best parts of Apollo 13 and of The Martian as well, is these are the parts that we have. These are the parts that they have to work with. They do this in For All Mankind as well. How can we do it based on what they've got? And it's something that could be really fun in an episode of Star Trek, but it's never, sometimes it's clever to not do it because it's like, that's not the thing we're actually exploring this episode.
Yeah.
It's never not fun. Like, for me, it's never not fun to like brainstorm that stuff together. And it is frustrating when it's just like, let's techno babble this because we can. Like, that's not a satisfying resolution to the plot. But yeah, this is one of the episodes where I think it works, because it's not the, it's the how the Enterprise escapes isn't really what the episode is about. So I think I give them more of a pass. One of the other sins I had was the fact that the Enterprise gets to leave. Like, we don't see the Romulan captain again. Picard's just like, just ping them an email. Just say, yeah, what you just saw was some crazy shit. Don't worry. My people will talk to your people. Bye. Like, you said, like, the Romulan ship should just open fire. Like, it just decloaked. Yeah. Treaty over.
Yeah, a Federation ship, like, decloaked just, like, off their bow. Like, and they waited for like a response. They
yes.
Like, even if they didn't try to destroy the Enterprise, I would figure the Romulans would at least fire off like a warning shot.
Oh my god!
Like, just to be like, I don't know what's going on, but like, you better know that we're ready to do something.
The only thing, like, what I can imagine happened on the bridge, like, this is on the bridge of the Romulan ship. This is how it plays out. The Enterprise decloaks. Their equivalent of Worf says, shit, the Enterprise is decloaking, I'm gonna fire. And the captain is just like, give it a minute, I'm sure they have a good excuse.
Wait a second. I got a feeling.
I'm sure there's a perfectly rational explanation for why the Federation starship decloaked through a meteor. So yeah, it's, we've seen them fire for less. The other huge sin, and we've hit on this a couple of times, but it's worth diving into a bit more, I think, is the absolute blaring absence of Deanna the entire episode. Yeah. She has to be missing, otherwise she would read all over Riker that he's hiding something. Like, yeah, she can't specifically read, actually she can read his thoughts, because they do it in episode one. He's one of the few people where they have a connection where they can exchange words with each other. So, but at the very least, she would sense deception, anxiety. Like, she would be able to put this together so, so quick. So she needs to not be there. But it is such a huge absence. That's, I think we said, it's kind of fixed in These Are the Voyages, but it still doesn't make sense.
Was there just no explanation at all why she wasn't on the bridge? Like,
no, she's in the Captain Picard day.
I was just thinking, because I haven't seen the season in a while, like, was that something that, like she wasn't on the bridge as much or something like that?
I mean, if anything, she should be on the bridge more, because I think she's taken, maybe she hasn't taken it yet, but she's thinking about taking the commander's exam, and I think that happens this season. And that means that she has to put in a certain amount of hours on the bridge. So there's all the more reason for her to be there at this point. So yeah, the only reason she's not there is because I think on rewatching, you would be like, hey, Deanna, do you want to talk to Riker about anything about this? Like, you're really concerned about him? Like, at least give them a scene where Riker's like, shut up, Deanna. leave me alone.
Yeah, and she would have informed Picard that, like, there was something amiss.
Yeah.
Almost immediately as Pressman showed up on the ship.
Oh, she would immediately... She would sense that from decks and decks and decks away, I would think.
There's no chair. Is the obvious reason that the chap has informed us.
Is the champ... Did she lose her chair?
Pressman's sitting in her chair.
That's what it is. Yeah. The woman was ejected from the bridge because a man needed her chair. That's... Yeah. Completely... Yeah, that checks out. That's what it is.
True Star Trek fashion.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, here's something that I want your brain on. And I don't know if I've missed this, or maybe the live chat can help out as well. Why is it okay... And this is a two-pronged attack. Why is it okay for the Romulan ship and the Enterprise to be in the neutral zone? Because I feel like the neutral zone is established essentially to prevent ships from interacting. And I feel like they're both violating the neutral zone for a study of gaseous anomalies that neither ship knew about. And they must be in the neutral zone, right? Because there's no way either would be allowed in each other's space. So by definition, they must be in the neutral zone where neither of them should be.
Yeah, I was thinking about that. I thought that maybe I just didn't understand. Well, I know they avoid the neutral zone, but is it ever established, like, throughout the series? Like, it's not like a no-fly zone. It's like, it's neutral.
Yeah, I think I always assumed that, like, because there are episodes where it says we must not violate the neutral zone. We're dangerously close to the neutral zone. We've got to have a good reason. But someone in the live, or a couple of people in the live chat have mentioned that they don't think it's the neutral zone, but it's a bit of space that doesn't belong to either of them. So the neutral zone doesn't extend the entire galaxy, because that would be prohibitive. So at some point, it goes far enough away where it isn't a border between the Romulan Empire and the Federation. But in my head, I'm just like, then how is the Enterprise? How did it not take months to get there? Like, how did it not take a long time to get there? But then that's the only other reason, because the second prong of this attack is what is the Pegasus doing testing a cloaking device so close to the Romulans? Like, if you're going to test this anywhere, don't do it near the Romulans. They're going to get pissed. Like, test it in Earth.
Because they say, like, it drifted. Like, how far could it possibly have drifted?
It couldn't. Even in 12 years, it couldn't have drifted. Unless it's drifting at warp, which I think is an oxymoron. It's not, like, wherever they're doing the experiment, it drifted pretty close to where that was. So
they say that it, because at one point he says, like, this room has been open to space for, like, 12 years. So, like, it had to have the incident with the asteroid relatively, I think he says 12 years.
Yeah.
Is it 10 years or 12 years? So relatively quickly after they left the ship, after the explosion. Mm-hmm. So
So I just think if they're close enough for it to be legit for the Romulans to be investigating without raising any treaty violations, it was a dumb place to be testing the Pegasus with its new, very illegal cloaking device.
Well, when is the neutral zone established?
I think it's established with the Treaty of Algernon. Yes, Algernon was the name of the person who wrote it. The Treaty of Algernon. So that would be like 60 years prior. It's after the war ended. So yeah, like 60 years earlier.
So that doesn't help.
No, that does not add up. I did have an email sin that was sent to me by Emmanuel, who was very, very happy to hear that this was the episode we were going to be covering this week. So Daniel, you have a fan in Emmanuel. He's very grateful. But he has a gripe, and I had a similar gripe as well that, again, is worth discussion. Emmanuel says, Will has been out of Starfleet Academy for 12 years, and this is season 7, which means that he made, from leaving the Academy to being commander, first officer of the Enterprise, that happened in 5 years, because he's been on the Enterprise for 7 years. So 12 minus 7 is 5. So do we think that's a super-duper quick time for him to have made commander? And no less, in season 2, they offer him his own ship, which means 6 years out of the Academy, he's getting his own ship, essentially. And then he gets offered again. Like, how, like, this episode, Emmanuel says, should be, like, maybe 20 years or, like, probably 20 years. The Pegasus incident should have happened 20 years earlier. And that 5 years is a very, very short amount of time to leave the Academy and then immediately be captain. Or commander, and then be courted to be captain very quickly.
I guess my only response is that, like, Kirk gets his captain pretty quick in the Kelvin timeline. I don't know.
Okay. No, it doesn't count. No. I tell you now, absolutely it does not count as
someone put in the captain Kelvin.
That's amazing. That's amazing. This is not the Kelvin timeline. No.
That annoyed me in the Kelvin timeline. Just like,
oh, it's infuriating. I don't get it. I not just that I'll get through the Academy in 3 years. I'm going to be you have to be maybe you have to be captain for that mission, but you don't get to stay captain after the mission, you dick.
It's gross negligence on the part of Starfleet.
Absolutely. Whoever promoted Admiral Pressman promoted Kirk in the Kelvin timeline, I think. And I know that timeline doesn't make any sense, but shush. But does it strike you as weird? I don't know. It's just on the edge of believability for me. It's just on the edge of Riker, like, getting fast-tracked for reasons we don't really know.
He man's got secrets. Like, he's done some things.
Yeah. I mean, this is just one of them. Like, they need to, I think Picard needs to have, are there any other shady missions that you're hiding from me? None that I want to talk about right now, thanks.
My final take on that is that it irks me in the sense that it's very much a consequence of the TV show.
Yes.
Just being TV show, that I don't think that they thought through that aspect of it. Didn't think through something in season 7 from season 2 when he's offered the command?
Yeah, season 2. Yeah.
So I just think that, like, because of the nature of the show, that no one really thought long term about, like, the intertwining of all these storylines and, like, whether or not it makes sense. So it's just, like, sort of has to happen so they can tell the story they want to tell. So like that, in that sense, it irks me. It is like argumentative, though, just because, like, we don't have enough information to say it's completely implausible.
Yeah,
even though it seems like it should be.
We don't know how desperate they are for captains, and it's almost like they didn't expect nerds to be debating it 30 years later in this level of detail. Almost like that. Yeah, no, the my biggest one, my other, like, really, really big one is what we talked about earlier, which is you don't need the phasing part of this cloak. Like, I don't know why, like, do you have to be invisible in order to phase? Because I feel like this is a separate branch of technology you could get away with developing without including the cloak.
Yeah, you just separate it into two pieces. Even if you accidentally discover them at the same time.
Yes.
You could be like, all right, do we need to be invisible for this other thing to work?
Yeah.
And, like, maybe you do, I don't know, but... I don't know. I guess I argued myself out of it.
I feel like you don't need to be invisible if you don't have to worry about the things you're being invisible from. Like, you don't have to worry about being shot if, in theory, the torpedoes are passing
through
you.
You can show up and they can see you, and then, like, they will shoot, and, like, nothing would happen.
Yeah.
So it's like it defeats the phasing defeats the purpose of the cloak.
Yeah. Fire away. We'll be okay. That's fine.
So it's like, why did they continue violating the treaty once they figured it out? Right, that's like the like they could have just been like, oh well, we don't even need to violate the treaty anymore.
we'll quit that. It doesn't matter. I mean, and there's also, like, other applications. I think Sarah in the chat mentioned, why can't you just phase a torpedo? Like, you could phase a torpedo, fire it so that it phases through shields and through the bulkhead, and then it unphases once it's inside the ship, and then blow it up. Like, that's terrifying. Oh, that's so scary. There are so many other applications for this phasing tech that doesn't necessarily violate the cloaking stuff, but also you wouldn't get this episode. So that's probably the answer.
I mean, it sounds like he's an unethical character. I think he could technically write it without the treaty violation. I think maybe that makes the Romulans' presence there a little bit less of a issue.
I get there's kind of a sin there where I don't know why the Enterprise doesn't, like, call them out. Just like, look, we know there's a ship here. We know you know there's a ship here, but also fuck off, it's our ship. Like, the Enterprise is in the right. Yeah. The Romulans are stealing.
That is true.
This isn't like maritime law. It's not like salvages, like, whoever finds it first gets to keep it. Like, no, this is our ship, guys. Leave us alone. Go away.
Especially once they found it. Like,
yeah.
Maybe before that, like, the race to get it might have been made more sense, but it's like, we found it, and it's like, we need to not let them know that we found our ship.
Yeah. We can't let them know that we found the thing that is ours. That's amazing. I feel this is one of those episodes where I really feel dirty sinning it, because I do love it so much. It's such an entertaining episode on lots of different levels. Great performances, fun technology to play with, and it's just one of the reasons I really actually like season 7 is just how comfortable everybody seems to be, cast, crew, everyone just, like, seems to be really in it at this point and really living on the Enterprise. Any final thoughts about why it's your favorite now that we've dissected it to death?
It's not my favorite anymore.
Oh, shit. Oh, this is why we shouldn't do this show.
No, I think that it's still a great character story for Riker. I forgive it for how it got there.
Yeah, completely agree. Okay, everyone, thank you for joining us. We hope you enjoyed that ride on the Pegasus. Next week, Ambassador Dene will be joining us, and we're going to be heading into some TOS, as next week's episode is going to be Amok Time, Season 2, Episode 1. This has been requested by a few people. It's an all-time classic episode of TOS. Yes, we will be singing. Yes, there will be Cable Guy references. Daniel, before we sign off, where can people find you? And do you have anything you want to plug?
You can't find me. I'm not. No,
he has been face quiet.
I'm not active on social media, but you can find me on Instagram at Dan the Ruminator.
Nice. And until next week, I'm Captain Ian, and apparently I'm somewhat of a role model.
I'm Dan Bastard. I'm Ambassador Dan. And theoretically, it is possible.
Amazing. Live long and prosper.
Thanks for listening. Want to connect with the show? Our hailing frequencies are always open through captainspod@cinemasins.com. Like, comment, and subscribe on your podcast player of choice, and be sure to visit cinemasins.com.
Checkity, checkity, test, test, test. If you could pick a rank, what would it be?
Lieutenant Commander.
your aspirations are very, very high. Just, I don't really want the responsibility of being a full commander, but just like better than a lieutenant, so you can just look down on everyone else.
Yeah.
What can we portmanteau with Daniel? Daniel Adore. It's a stupid name, Daniel. You should really get a better one. It's easier to Star Trek.
Yeah, with ranks.
Daniel's here. It's a surprise. Can you see the comments, Daniel? I don't know if you've got it up on your thing.
Yes, I can.
Amazing. Abuse Daniel. Don't abuse Daniel. Send him love.
I see that Slab is not writing a paper that should be written.
That is consistent pretty much every week. Slab should be doing some kind of work, but is watching us instead. And I respect that choice. I respect it.
You're an enabler.
I really am. It's really true. Season 7 is the one with all of the family issues and Worf starting a relationship with Deanna. And I can't remember any other family issues, but I know the way. Oh, did Geordi have a thing with his mum in this season? That sounds weird.
Not like that.
Like his mum. No, don't like that. His mum goes missing. I don't think this is season 7, though. I feel like that's season 6. He, I think it's called Interface or something like that. And he has a visor interface where he can be a robot. Oh, it is season 7. Yay! Woo!
That was episode 3.
Nice. Picard's not son as well, that a Ferengi has been hunting, I think. Yeah, I think every single cast member gets a family issue to wrap up the season. Wandering says, I think the idea is that phasing is intrinsically what makes you invisible, Geordi and Ro in the next phase. So yeah, they're phased and invisible. So yeah, maybe you can't be, being out of phase is also part of the visual spectrum as well. So maybe that, but then again, we're making up technology, people. Just make it up so that doesn't become a problem. Like, that's only an issue because this made up technology is has made it an issue as well.
And then now I have to go back and rewatch that, because now I'm curious about what Riker's feedback in the, I don't remember the whole the episode. Like, is he even a prominent character in it? Or like, because like, he's had this very traumatic experience, or not, well, I guess he wasn't on the ship then, but like, he should theoretically know a little bit about phasing, like, or at least have had an experience with it.
So the only pass they get is that they assume, the entire crew assumes that Geordi and Ro are dead. So yeah, they have no idea that phasing technology is involved until the very end of the episode. Yeah. But then, yeah, at that point, Riker would absolutely be like shitting bricks and probably just like, oh, I know exactly what this does and I shouldn't know. And I think it would cause him to reach out to Pressman and just be like, by the way, the Romulans are developing this technology. Mm. Heads up, wink, wink, nudge, nudge. But you're forgetting, Daniel, that this episode hadn't been written at that point.
Yeah. I didn't forget. I'm judging them.
Yes, I'm judging them because of that.
Them not knowing the future.
Exactly.
Seems very reasonable.
Mm-hmm. Completely, completely agree. This is a good physics question from Flyboy. If a ship is out of phase with the space around it, would thrusters be able to move it through space? A large version of the why didn't Geordian row fall through the decks sim in the next phase, which is true. I don't have an answer for this. I don't have, probably because I don't fully understand how thrusters work.
I don't understand. Well, I mean, thrusters are impulse engines because...
That's true. That's two different things.
Impulse engines are confused. Yeah. I mean, are made up science. Yes. I mean, like, in general, like, thrusters is just like you push some matter that way.
Yeah.
Is the little jet, and like it pushes, you know, equal and opposite reaction. So I mean, theoretically, yeah, that makes sense. It really shouldn't be able to move in space unless we don't understand how space works.
I think it's very clear that we don't understand how warp drive and impulse engines work.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like you need to understand like string theory or
yeah,
or one of the theories. I think we're beyond string theory. Like, I feel like string theory is actually pretty old, and like now they're onto something else.
At this point, we should just wait for the quantum computers and just ask them, because I think then they'll come out with an answer that we can't comprehend.
I did hear something that like kind of blew my mind. You speak of like quantum computers that like I don't even know if I'm going to explain this correctly. But it was something like, if all the matter in the known universe was used, was like converted into like computing power, basically, that it still wouldn't be enough to render the known universe based on how we understand.
Wild.
Like, so there's like the theory is that the universe is not locally generated.
Oh, so that's wild.
Outside the universe generating our universe. And I may have gotten that wrong, so you have to do your own research, but that was the best, that was the best paraphrasing of the way I heard it explained.
Because, the first thing my brain went to was that it's not just all of the things in the universe, it's how all of those things interact with all of the other things. Like, that's the bit that's hard to predict and render. Like, you've got to take into account how gravity is affecting everything and how mass changes, or mass is affected by gravity, which is why when you try and like extrapolate where something is going to be, the further out it gets, the less likely you are to be confident of where it's going to be. So yeah, man, that breaks my brain. And that's what sucks. We're probably just never going to be smart enough to comprehend any of these really cool things.
I'm not going to be smart enough to comprehend it. I know that. Weird thing, when he the Admiral gives like Worf an order to like have the captain have Picard like arrested or whatever, and like everyone on the bridge is just like, no.
Yes.
But in the very next shot, like, when they're trying to solve like the issue, like, Pressman is still just like standing there.
It's so weird. Yeah.
Like, they don't take him into custody.
No. It's just Riker is calmly explaining, like, this is how we can use the phasing cloak to get the Enterprise out of here. And Pressman's just like, yeah, if we do that, then we can do this. Like, well, why are you now on board with this, dickhead?
That was such a weird moment. Yeah.
It's so, so strange. It's got to be that, like, I don't know, he assumes that they're just going to get out of there. I think the bit that Pressman doesn't predict is Picard decloaking in front of the Romulans. And I think Link asked this question. Why did he decloak in front of them? And I think it's a sign of good faith, because if the Enterprise makes it back by not telling them, then the word that the Romulan captain takes back to the Empire is fuck. But if they decloak, then they can control the narrative and explain, yeah, we know this is fucked up, but we're gonna be talking, don't worry, unless you want to start a war.
Yeah, be like, they can hang this around, like, they can pin this on somebody.
Yeah,
and basically be like, this person's being charged with this and whatnot.
USS Crazy Horse, another Excelsior-class ship, relegated to being a glorified business jet. It's such a... I mean, you've seen that, like, the Crazy Horse is just a ridiculous name for a ship. Which it is.
They're just like, we have, what is it? Yeah, like all the other, we have the Pegasus, Enterprise, and like
the Agamemnon.
Reaching out into space, and then like they're like, well, we got this guy. What are we going to call him? Ah, the Crazy Horse.
you don't want to go into battle with that ship? Well, the Crazy Horse is doing a Leroy Jenkins again. Biggest sin of the episode is not the fault of anyone involved at the time. It's on the Enterprise showrunners for using this as the story device. But these are the voyages, the finale for Enterprise. It's like, it's almost like Enterprise was trying to borrow some valor from TNG by incorporating one of the most popular episodes that was also at the back end of the run. So you can like acknowledge why Riker looks older. But yeah, it's such like a shitty way to end Enterprise by basing it in this episode. Why is the prototype so important to the project? Why haven't they made another one by now? Why do they need this one specifically? Like, they made one prototype and then for 12 years forgot how to make another one? Like, that does seem strange.
And Pressman would definitely be involved in that project. Like, we would imagine that's why they kept him on and promote him to an admiral. Like, that would be something he would probably be overseeing.
Yeah, I don't know why that wouldn't be a thing. It's
like, then they just lost all the science. They never, like,
they killed everyone,
backed up information.
It was seen as a failure. Ship went boom. That's never stopped us to date. Things blowing up I don't think that's ever stopped us from continuing to make that thing, especially when it comes to war.
Yeah.
We're fairly motivated.
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean, occasionally that I feel like when it becomes prohibitively expensive, but
yeah,
they don't believe in money in the future.
That's true. Yeah, I mean, what else are you researching that is more cool than that? Yes, Sarah, we are finally doing an episode of TOS. Danae loved the Voyager episode. We did so much. It was really hard to not dive back into Voyager. So I think we're going to do TOS and then we're going to go back and do another episode of Voyager. But this was the plan before we had to shift the schedule around a little bit. I'm really excited to do an episode of TOS and to do a classic one as well. The reason I've held back on Amok Time in particular is because of how the T'Pring stuff is being done in Strange New Worlds. Because there's a lot more mention of Spock and T'Pring and the fact that the Enterprise crew are aware that T'Pring exists, and they definitely aren't in this episode, which is weird. So I was a little bit worried about it being spoilery for Danae, because this kind of shows the end of the story, but I don't think it's going to play that much into Strange New Worlds, and I don't think it's going to affect her enjoyment, because she'll have forgotten what happens in this episode by the time Strange New Worlds comes back, because that is Danae's brain. So I'm not overly worried about it. Oh, Wandering Wind is pulling out receipts. Areas of space found susceptible to warp fields will be restricted to essential travel only and effective immediately. All Federation vessels will be limited to a speed of warp 5, except in cases of extreme emergency. Okay. Yeah, so it is the entire fleet.
Okay.
Yeah, it's everywhere. So that's a wild thing that they completely ignore. They never come back to that, other than I think in this episode. Which, now that I think about it, is kind of fucked up for Voyager. Because they'll get home and be like, they knowing that going at warp 9 that entire time just destroyed the Delta Quadrant. so many consequences for that.
Oh my God.
It's so dark.
That's dark. That show, man. That show should have been. It was good for what it was, but like, if you did Voyager now, you could. It would just be a much more. It would be a bigger drama. Like, it would just be. Yeah. So dark, like, you could, it just, the consequences of everything they do, and like having to know what they've done.
Yeah, my goodness, the consequences. Yeah, now I think Janeway comes back a very different person if that show comes out today. I don't believe this is canon. Voyager is fine. The moving nacelles are supposed to help mitigate that problem. Really? Is that legit? Is that the reason? That's never mentioned on screen, is it? That's if that's all it takes, that's wild. And also, wouldn't they have to flap mid-warp?
Like, now we need to further explore the variable warp geometry of the Enterprise.
Oh my gosh, how would that work with three nacelles?
That thing is just it's like a diesel truck that
polluting everywhere. Fuck you guys, I don't care. No, I think the third top nacelle spins. It rotates like a helicopter. That's how we vary our warp geometry. That's canon now. The third Sinterprise nacelle. If anybody ever makes a model of the Sinterprise, that one has to spin.
Save big on everything for your next project when you shop at Menards. Finish up projects with GE-branded silicone sealants. Tub and tile silicone is 100% waterproof and offers same-day water readiness, making it perfect to use in kitchens and bathrooms. Shop our selection of GE sealants in-store and on Menards.com and save big. Plus, check out the weekly flyer to view all of our other great deals happening this week. Save big.